The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Good morning, everybody. Or good whatever time of day you happen to be listening to this. I'm here. I'm ready to go. I'm wearing my Wisdom Goat shirt that I just pulled out of the packaging. For those of you who watch on YouTube, when the video actually starts, it's probably wrinkled because it just came out of the packaging. But I don't care. It's made by 30 Seconds Out, which is owned by Sean Evangelista, one of the coolest motherfuckers to ever walk the face of the planet. And if you're not following them and supporting them, then I don't know what to tell you. You probably sit down when you pee, I guess. I don't know. Full Auto Friday, 96. Let's get into it.
Okay, I got the red smoke. Gun run! North and south! West of the smoke! West of the smoke!
Okay, copy. West of the smoke. I'm looking at danger close now.
I'm all with it, baby. Give it to me. I need it. You're clear hot.
Copy, clear hot.
Shall we begin? Here we go. I was just about to open up with lying to everybody. I have four screenshots. This one has nine questions, and you'll understand why I picked it here in a second. Screenshot number one. I recently listened to a podcast where the listeners asked what were described as normal everyday questions that you would ask a friend. I thought this was a cool idea and wanted to see if you would answer a cluster of questions that would take less time than the questions you normally receive on a Full Auto Friday. In doing so, perhaps this will spur even more questions from other listeners, i.e. fresher questions. Perhaps this person thinks that those of you submitting questions, they're a little bit repetitive. I don't. I enjoy the fact that people reach out, but that's just me. Please know that any questions that are asked come from a place of deep respect and general curiosity. Number one, have you ever killed with your hands in a CQB situation, e.g., melee, knife, muzzle punch, etc.? Now, I'm going to go right back to what you said in your first sentence, or second. No, it's first. Normal, everyday questions that you would ask a friend. Your question number one is not a normal, everyday question that you would ask a friend, is it, sir or ma'am or madam, depending on who sent this in here? But I'll show you answer it very simply and easily. No. And I hope that I never have to. I never wanted to. I carried weapons that had the ability to launch projectiles at thousands of feet per second, hundreds of yards. And that is the distance that I would prefer to engage individuals at. Putting hands on people is an absolute worst-case scenario. Did I say worst-case? Worst-case scenario. It gets really sloppy at that point. Things can get out of control. And I like standoff distance. So no. Number two, during an overnight mission or stalk, what do you do when somebody snores loudly? Do you have them sleep a certain way to not give away the position? Is there a mouth device that is provided to limit excess noise when sleeping during an op? It's an interesting question. Never been asked this. I'm not aware of a mouth device that has been created or provided to individuals. And the reality is, if somebody's snoring really loud, you kick them until they wake up, and then they can be awake while you sleep if they repetitively do the same thing over and over again. I feel like, though, you might have a misconception about how military operations go, specifically in the SEAL world. If you're doing an SR, special reconnaissance, where you're a small element and you're overwatching something, you're trying to be really sneaky. A lot of the times, though, we kind of come in mass. Maybe you're strong pointing a building, you're barricading that building, sandbags, all sorts of stuff. So snoring isn't really that big of a deal. There shouldn't be anybody that close to you that's actually going to be alerted by your snoring. Having said that, it can get really irritating. So you can kick the person if they're next to you, or another thing you can do that's I think is very fun is actually get a rock and you throw it at their head. And when they wake up, you pretend like you're sleeping. And you can repeat that over and over again to your extreme level of enjoyment and to that individual's frustration, if you want to. I'm not sure what that says about me. And I'm not even actually going to say that I've necessarily done that, but maybe I have. I definitely have, but it's an option. Number three, do operators wear contact lenses in the teams or other special operations unit? Or does everyone get LASIK or just wear glasses if needed? I know people who have gotten LASIK, PRK. I know people who have worn contact lenses. I know people who have worn glasses. I believe that there was a vision requirement when I joined the military in 96 for the SEAL pipeline. I do not know where that stands now, and I don't know if that could be corrected either via LASIK or PRK, or if they would count contact lenses. But I have seen people in, I think, pretty much every special operations community wearing either corrective lenses of some kind or getting the surgery. So they could wear contacts if they wanted to. I suspect, though, most people, if they were eligible for the surgery, would probably get it. Number four, if you were in a winter survival situation with Mike Glover and temperatures were dropping dramatically every hour, knowing you had to cuddle up in a BioVac to not die, who would be the big spoon and who would be the little spoon? Very easy question. Obviously, I would be the big spoon. Mike would be my little spoon, my supple little spoon. I feel like in this situation, we would probably be nude because we would want to have maximum transfer of body heat. And there's a rule, you know, are there some rules that you need to live by on this? One, it goes like this. Hole to hole is okay. Pole to pole is not okay. Pole to hole is also frowned upon. So you could just back up against each other. And then in this situation, I think you'd be just fine. But Mike and I both know he'd be the little spoon. But I don't think we'd find ourselves in a situation like this. I think we would Uber and get the hell out of there. Question five, what kind of music do you listen to? I listen to just about any type of music. I'm not a huge fan of opera. And I think that's about it as far as music that just, it doesn't speak to me very much. And a lot of like gangster-ish rap. It just, it doesn't make sense to me. Other than that, I mean, occasionally I'll have country on. I mean, I'll listen to some pop. I mean, I will listen to the shit out of some pop music if it's in the background. I'm not saying I'm going to necessarily go search it out, but Party in the USA, Miley Cyrus, I'll listen to that song. Wrecking Ball, not a bad beat, in my opinion. So very wide on that. I just cannot stand opera, though, for the life of me. Number six, favorite movies besides the documentary Navy SEALs with Charlie Sheen? I don't know if I have a favorite movie. I'll give you a favorite genre. I like documentaries. I enjoy watching documentaries. I really enjoy watching documentaries, apparently, that are boring because my fiance Leah refuses to allow me to pick documentaries when we were watching together. Because I'll watch documentaries on like the downfall of Boeing. I'll watch them on the industry, like fruit blending industry. I'll watch it on cryptocurrency. The shit's fascinating to me. And then I also will go extremely deep down the rabbit hole of murder mystery. And I think at some point she's had enough. But that is my favorite genre. Her favorite genre is the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So anybody listening can tell, man, there's a gap there in between those two. Number seven, have you ever worn braces? Yes, I have. I have worn braces. I wore braces for 3 out of 4 years in high school while I was playing water polo. And sometimes I would forget my mouthpiece, which I realized I needed after taking a water polo ball directly in the face and then having to slowly pop my inside of my lip off of the brace brackets individually. But yeah, wore them for 3 years, and I think my teeth are crooked again. So I think there was probably a retainer and other steps after that that I may not have actually followed through on. Number eight, black or colored ink for tattoos. Man, both are good. I have black tattoos and I have colored ink tattoos. I'm getting ready to get another tattoo that will be largely darker, but it will have color. And I think it just depends on the design. I really like the traditional just black, but also I've seen some fantastic tattoos with color. So yes is the answer to that one. And then nine, when was the last time you swam in any body of water? Good question. I am not a huge fan of the water. I was born and raised in Santa Cruz. I was in the water all the time. I did junior lifeguards. I played water polo. I would go to the beach, like many do, on coastal towns. And then I was really forced to go in the water for a long period of time. We just got back from Costa Rica. We were at a Henry Aikens hidden jiu-jitsu camp, and this is not even related to the question at all, but if you like jiu-jitsu and you want to go to an amazing camp, like the best investment of money you could probably spend on your jiu-jitsu progression, go to hiddenjiu-jitsucamps.com and see what they have to offer. He's already got one up for Florida. He's got one up for Vegas in the next few months. I'm going to both. I am willing to invest in myself and my jiu-jitsu. Now back to the question. We were in Costa Rica at one of his camps. 2 weeks ago, we were there. I went into the water zero times. We were at his Costa Rica camp a year before that. I went into the water. Oh, damn, I was going to say zero times, but we took a catamaran out like a sunset cruise, and I jumped into the water. I was disgusted with myself for doing so, and I let myself down because normally I avoid the water like it's boiling hot lava. It's just not my thing anymore. So that would actually be the last time that I swam in a body of water. It was a year ago, last February, for a very brief period of time. And like I just said, I let myself down. I shouldn't have gone back in that water. Not a fan. I'll stick with land sports. And by that, I mean motorcycles. Motorcycles are awesome. Street bike and dirt bike. Okay. Question. I'm going to call this question number two. Subject, BRCC, which stands for Black Rifle Coffee Company. Hey, Andy, I am getting pushback for wearing Black Rifle Coffee Company gear. I am being told they caved to the media on the Kyle Rittenhouse issue. This might be a little too controversial for you to answer since you are opening a BRCC store. What is your take on BRCC and Kyle Rittenhouse? Now, for people listening who are potentially interested in submitting questions, I don't believe that there is a topic that is too controversial for me to answer. If the question looks interesting, regardless of the topic, I will do my best to pull it aside in the inbox. I'll take a screen grab so I don't make a mistake and say the person's name or have personal details that could identify them. And I'll do the best I can to answer it. Obviously, I can't answer every question that I get, but there is no limit when it comes to being too controversial. And on this one, I actually don't even find it to be controversial. The best person to ask about this and to talk with about what specifically and exactly was said would be Evan. And I'm due to, actually in the near future, we're going to do at least one episode every Friday. We'll be Evan and I sitting down bullshitting about everything in the BRCC universe and answering questions. So, and I can bring this up to him, and I will, because we've talked about this. And actually, when this was initially playing itself out, he happened to be up in Montana. We had recorded a podcast, or I think we were getting ready to the next day, and he was dealing with this. And I can only answer this question from the perspective of what it is my understanding of what was said. And that is that Evan, or Black Rifle Coffee, I don't know which one the statement would fall underneath. A lot of people would say that they're the exact same thing, but the reality of the business is that they are not. One, obviously, Evan is the founder, allegedly, and can speak for the company, but not everything that Evan says is actually speaking for the company. They're individual entities, but they can be combined. From my understanding, what was said was a very simple statement. And the statement was based on, there was a picture of Kyle that was wearing a Black Rifle Coffee, I believe it was a t-shirt. And now that I'm saying that, I think it might have, could have potentially been a hat. It doesn't matter. It was a piece of Black Rifle Coffee apparel, hat or a t-shirt. And Evan made a statement, or like I said, Black Rifle Coffee made a statement that they do not have an official relationship with Kyle Rittenhouse. And what I saw from that was a tidal wave of people saying, fuck you, you guys don't believe in the Second Amendment, you don't believe in self-defense, you're trying to play both sides, and it spun off into a variety of different things. Now, mind you, the comment was made within, I think, 1 or 2 days of the incident involving Mr. Rittenhouse. And I say that because I think that's really important. People who view instances like what happened with Kyle, and you want to make a judgment or a decision about what happened, about the justification of what happened, about the legality of what happened, in the hours and days after an incident based off the sporadic information that you can gather either on social media or mainstream media, in my opinion, you are making a mistake because it takes a really long time for the actual truth to come out. Now, in this situation, it appeared to be a justifiable use of force in a self-defense situation. But what appears to be something can end up being something else. Fortunately, in this country, we have a court of law to decide these things. But I think it is putting the cart before the horse to step up and say either A, we 100% support Kyle, or B, we are 100% against Kyle. That's not the place for either Evan or Black Rifle Coffee. And like I said, I don't believe that they took that position. The position that they took was, is we don't have an official relationship with Kyle. Because A, and I actually do remember him saying this, he said he did not want to profit off of the situation. And that could come from people seeing his shirt on, shirt or hat. I'm just going to say both because I can't remember for the life of me which one it was. On Kyle, which would then potentially lead them to maybe want to search out the company and buy some. But B, I don't think it's a good idea for any company to jump in either of those buckets 100%. I think it's unprofessional, and I think what you need to do is allow space for a court of law to do what a court of law can do. An investigation, a trial, a verdict. Leave it with that. I don't know what people expected Evan to say. I don't know what people expected Black Rifle Coffee to say. What I can tell you, based off my years of knowing them and my countless hours of interactions, not only with Evan and those that work with the company, is that they couldn't be more supportive and protective of the Second Amendment. They couldn't be more supportive and protective of people's right to self-defense. It's not an issue of whether or not Evan or a company thinks what appears to have happened is right or wrong. I think what they were trying to make sure was that, and I think Evan was correct to do this, is when that picture came out, is to say, hey, listen, and again, I don't know the exact messaging that he used, but if I was in Evan's situation, here's what I would have said. And maybe this is exactly what he would have said. Be like, hey, you know, as Black Rifle Coffee, as the founder of Black Rifle Coffee, I couldn't be more supportive of the Second Amendment. I couldn't be more supportive of people utilizing the tools and means available and necessary for self-defense. But we're not going to make a comment on this situation because we are going to allow the system to do what the system does, to actually determine what happened. Yes, there is a picture of this individual wearing one of our shirts, but that does not mean we are supporting this individual. It also doesn't mean that we are defaming this individual in any way. And it just will allow for, and I think Evan had to, he had to say something. And for a lot of people who are very critical of what he did say, they've never been in a place where the founder and they're the founder and the CEO of a huge brand, and they've never been put into a place or had the world present them with a situation where they had to say something. I think what he did say, again, based off my recollection of what he did say, was correct. And the reality is, regardless of what he did say, he was probably going to piss off 50%. So he did the best he could. And for the people that are telling you that they caved to the media, I would just ask you or ask them, how did he cave? Like, their morals and values of the company changed 0%. They made a statement about something that was happening early on, so people would understand that they didn't have an official relationship or a sponsorship, and that, well, that's not wrong to do that. Is that going to piss off some people? Sure. But I think that's the correct move for a CEO to make. And if people don't want to hear that or they don't agree with that, then cool. I would say vote with your wallet. If you want to buy the coffee, buy the coffee. If you want to buy the merchandise, buy the merchandise. If you don't, you don't. My opinion on Black Rifle Coffee and Evan changed 0%. Throughout that entire instance, people can say, oh, well, it's biased. And, you know, you're friends with them and you're opening a coffee shop. All that's true. But I still like to at least believe, or I would like to believe, that I can objectively think for myself. And I don't know if people realize this, but if my friends do something that is fucked up, I will absolutely tell my friends, hey, you're fucked up. and what you're doing is fucked up. And I would hope that my friends would do exactly the same thing for me. So they don't get a free pass, and they shouldn't get a free pass, right? Friends tell you what you need to hear, not what you want to hear. I think Black Rifle Coffee did the best that they could. The Rittenhouse situation, you know, it played itself out. There's, to me, there's so many other things that we could talk about, like whether or not he should have been there in the first place. You know, I'm not even going to get into that. I've talked about it enough in the past, but that's my take. And some people probably won't like that, and that's okay. Question three. A little bit of a longer one. All right. My question is about evil. And have you ever struggled to cope with its existence? How would you counsel others to do so? I just got off a call with my wife, who is a deputy district attorney. She now focuses on homicide, and business is booming. When I first started dating her, she prosecuted sex crimes, which included sex crimes against children. I've gone to watch her in a few homicide trials. The victim's family is always there. My wife introduces me, and several times I have held out my hand in greeting to be returned with a fairly passionate hug. The pain felt by victims is indescribable. Interestingly enough, it's news stories about folks like James Alex Hurley, a 12-year-old murdered at Lake, Hebgen in 2020, that she struggles to deal with. Or when she has to appear at a parole hearing for three defendants convicted of gang rape and the parole board decides to release them. Or almost as bad, schedule another parole hearing in 12 months, which requires the victim or family to attend that hearing again. We could go on and on citing examples of horrific things that people do. You and I have both seen firsthand some of the things humans can do to one another. I find myself, if not entirely at a loss, then at least ill-prepared on how to help others cope emotionally, especially children. Physically, I'm a fan of SA, which I'm assuming you mean situational awareness, jujitsu, and guns, classic trio. Telling people that there is good along with evil, while true, feels trite. Having young children seems to make the task of recognizing and dealing with the existence of evil all the more fraught and all the more pressing. Thank you. Man, tough question. And there's some layers to this. And I was thinking about this as I was screen grabbing this and pulled onto the desktop. I was thinking about evil, and, you know, the evil, and you have kids, and how do you prepare your children for evil? Can you prepare them too much? Can you scare them? Can you jade their perspective? And I think, based off of the relationship with your wife, and I see this often, not often, I've seen it enough times with law enforcement, though, where they get a jaded perspective of, I think, kind of everybody, and they view everybody as a threat, or me, and I guess I'm speaking for them a little bit, or maybe I'm hypothesizing a little bit. I think they can get to a place where they just feel like everybody is a piece of shit. And I say that because law enforcement is interacting with people on their worst day, in their worst moments. And I've said this many times before, but I mean, I think it's true. I don't know of anybody who's ever called 911 to be like, hey, we're having a killer birthday party. Please send an officer over. We have a slice of cake waiting for them. No, it's like, grandpa, no, probably wouldn't be grandpa. Uncle Bob's drunk. He's beating the shit out of people, you know, or, you know, shooting at somebody or whatever. Like it's all drama and conflict based and violence and damage. And I think if you swim in that pond long enough, you know, your skin's always wrinkly a little bit. And it's really easy to feel like there is an overabundance of whatever that may be. So when I'm thinking about this and I'm thinking about your wife and your interactions with your wife, she could probably go on and on and on and on and on about these horrendous situations that I wish nobody had to live through. And I'm sorry that your wife has to live and work in this world, even though it sounds like she does an amazing job. But just recognize that it can blur your optic a little bit as to the rest of the world. Just like I was thinking about, let's say you lived on a beautiful tropical island somewhere, an undiscovered island somewhere. And it's like every morning you got to watch the sun come up and go down and watch these beautiful sunrises and sunsets. It would be very easy if you never left there, to think that that's what everybody experiences in the world. And the reality is, neither of those things are true. The stuff that your wife deals with, not saying that the stuff that she deals with isn't true, but those positions, those views of the world in general are not necessarily true. The answer, of course, is, or the reality it would be, is somewhere in between. I was thinking about evil when I was looking at this question, and I was thinking to myself, would I want to live in a world where there is no evil, where there are no threats? And I think the knee-jerk answer to that would be, yeah, of course. Oh, yeah, that'd be the best. But I actually think it would be the worst. I think we would be like the sloppiest, laziest, most slovenly expressions of human beings. I think it would be terrible if there was no evil in the world and there was no threat from what I can see of human behavior. We would be an absolute fuck show, and a lazy, fat, orange finger stained fuck show at that. I don't want anybody to have horrendous things to happen to them in their life, but I think threat and risk, the fact that it exists, you know, you mentioned situational awareness, jiu-jitsu, and guns. I love all three of those things. And, you know, I have to rack them and stack them in order because I think they're a classic, pairing. They're a classic thruple, and you can stack them however you want. But why do we need to be situationally aware? Why do a lot of people want to do jiu-jitsu? Why do a lot of people want to carry guns? Because they understand that all three of those things, individually and in combination, are great tools to prepare yourself for and defend yourself against threats. And I think that's a very healthy headspace. And again, I don't want anybody to have to suffer through those things, but I want there to be the threat of them so we can be the best, most prepared versions of ourselves. And saying that, I guess, I don't know, almost sounds horrible to say because it might sound as if I'm saying, well, some people are just, you know, it's not going to be great for the people that are, you know, unfortunate enough to live through those things. And I'm not saying that at all. I can deeply empathize with people that go through those things, but I just feel like the reality is statistically, the odds are in your favor and stats are great, right? Like, hey, the odds of getting eaten by a great white shark swimming in the ocean are super, super low. That's awesome until you're in the fucking jaws of a great white shark. And then all the stats don't really matter. So it's easy to say that. I think, though, the risk is worth the preparation. And when it comes to how do you counsel others, for one, for people who have been through horrendous situations and the families that you have met, and telling them, hey, or telling anybody that there's good along with evil, although it is true, it feels trite. I think the best thing that you can do for people is just to listen to them, empathize with them, and do the best you can to not be a piece of shit and not allow anybody in your circle to be able to fall victim if they have any way, shape, or form to be able to control that. Because when we're talking about crimes against kids, I mean, there's nothing that you're going to do to train a preteen child to protect themselves against an adult if push comes to shove, obviously. But being there to support, being there to be a shoulder to lean on, being there to listen, that's what I would focus on doing in the situations where you are presented with these families or with these individuals when you meet them with your wife, and then taking that and doing everything you can to try to help and prepare others in your circle, I think is the best that you can do with it. There is an opportunity, specifically having young children. You brought that up in the last sentence. Having young children seems to make the task of recognizing and dealing with the existence of evil all the more fraught and all the more pressing. I couldn't agree more. My worst nightmares in my life involve my children, and it involves something happening to my children that I cannot do anything about because I'm not there. And, that's the kind of shit that keeps me awake at night. Not really actually anything else in my life. It's just that fear of not being able to be there. Having said that, I don't want to round the corners, nerf everything in the world so my children don't experience risk, so they don't have the opportunity to make mistakes. I have open and honest conversations with my kids about human behavior, about the fact that there are psychopaths and sociopaths out there, that there are people out there that would like nothing more than to prey on them, and about situational awareness. And I try to introduce all three of my kids to jiu-jitsu. It didn't really stick. All three of my kids have shotguns, but they're not walking around armed. They know that the world, from a statistical perspective, is a pretty safe place. But they're not blind to the risk. And I think that that's the best that we can do. And as they grow up, you can do age-appropriate things. You could talk about things at a deeper level. You could introduce them to things like jiu-jitsu. You could introduce them to things like guns. Obviously, again, to reinforce this point, age-appropriate. Probably not the best to do all three of those with a six-year-old. You know, even though 22s are kind of awesome and under supervision, they could be a really cool bonding experience and a learning experience with kids. But don't try to nerf everything, and don't try to scare your children into oblivion. And at the same time, make sure they are aware of the risk. And I don't have a perfect ratio for that, but that's the approach I've taken with my kids. But yeah, I mean, evil's a terrible, terrible thing. But I think it can also create and foster the best expression of what human beings are capable of. Last question for today. Hey, Andy, I'm in a little bit of a rough patch. I am 25 years old, recently married to a lovely woman who has a 9-year-old from a previous marriage. I also have a sister who just went through a divorce. Both of the exes are what some might call psychopaths. Maybe not completely, but they're legit crazy. I feel a lot of times that I can just solve the issues by going and beating the dog shit out of them, but my good side keeps me from doing it, and it keeps my mouth shut as well. Never have I said one cross word to either of them. Both of them feel power, and I'm assuming you mean the exes, by belittling the woman, but my wife's ex won't look me in the eye when he knows he's done something wrong. He's 6'4 and 250. I feel that he's scared of me, and sometimes I don't have to say things to him. My sister's ex is a hothead and cusses her out daily. In my opinion, my sister is one of the most straightforward, sweetest, and thoughtful human beings on the planet. My question is, at what point can I step in and say something? Does it have to come to violence before I can do something, or what? I'm in a tough situation, and I just want my family treated with respect, as they always give it to the other party. Longtime listener from Georgia. Well, this sucks, and it sucks you're dealing with it from a two-pronged approach. My first question for you, I'm going to go with your sister here first, is, and I have to make an assumption. You mentioned that you your ex has a child from a previous marriage. So that, to me, when you say that, you know, there's going to be a connection between mother and father, I would hope, probably throughout the rest of their life to a degree when it comes to co-parenting or having a relationship with their shared child. When it comes to your sister, you didn't mention that they have any kids, so I'm going to assume that they don't. And if they don't, my question to you would be this. How and when is this ex cussing her out? Is this something that he's calling and doing? Is this something that he's texting and doing? And my second question would be, why is she still talking to him? Let me see, what'd you say? Who just went through a divorce. Okay, so it sounds like it's finalized. There are reasons that you're going to have to be forced to communicate while going through a divorce. But post-divorce, I mean, if you have a smartphone and there's no reason to talk to this person, why don't you go find that contact button and hit fucking block? I would say the first thing, maybe sit down and have a conversation with your sister and say, why are you allowing this to happen? If it's done by text or it's done by phone, block the fucking number and be done with it, right? Does it have to come to violence before I can do something? I'm not going to advocate violence for anybody at any time, but what I'll tell you is, in the eyes of the law, if it does go to violence, they're going to be very interested in who initiated the violence and who was responding to the threat. So just keep that in the back of your mind. And also, let's go with proportional response here, right? The easy thing is, a guy often, I think, is to say, well, I'm beat the fuck out of you, and you want to impose your will on somebody. And the reality is, You might feel great by doing so. You might end up in the clink and have legal problems or medical problems on your own. You might break your hand on this moron's face. And then you could end up in jail. So you could get arrested with a broken hand and have significant cascading consequences from that event. It might make you feel better in the moment. But proportional escalating responses, I have found to always be the best. So with your sister, like I said, talk with her. Like, hey, stop talking to this douchebag. And then if it continues to escalate and, you know, she needs somebody else to be there to advocate for her, maybe you could step in that moment. And I would recommend, of course, verbal before anything physical. Again, I'm not advocating for violence in any way. And then when it comes to your ex, I would say actually for your sister and for your ex, boundaries are critical. Establish what the boundaries are going to be. Make sure that both parties know the boundaries. I mean, I don't care about how big, 6'4 and 250, that's awesome. There's plenty of complete pussies out there that are 6'4 and 250. Tall and big, it actually doesn't mean shit. Other than they're like really heavy if they're laying on top of you. That's about it. Which don't let that happen, right? Obviously, sweep, get on top, and submit. But that's a different part of the story. Set boundaries. Make sure they know the boundaries and then hold the boundaries. Divorces, in my experience at least, if there's contention still ongoing or after, there are tools that you can use. There is an app out there called Our Family Wizard, which is a communication app for contentious individuals who literally cannot communicate, and it can be monitored by a lawyer. And you could integrate that into the communication between your wife and her ex. I know of situations where that is the only medium with which people are able to control, and it can be court ordered if you feel like it's getting out of control. So again, there is this escalating continuum of responses. If the guy won't look you in the eye, that says quite a bit. I don't know if it necessarily says he's scared of you. What it probably means is he knows he's a piece of shit and he knows that he's wrong, because anybody who feels power by belittling, wow, struggling with that one. Anybody who thinks that they're awesome or feels power by belittling a woman is a piece of shit. Like, period, full stop, dot. Like, it's unacceptable. I actually cannot think of a single situation where that would be acceptable. You can have contentious arguments and conversations with people. Belittling people is completely different. So the best advice I can give you is use every mechanism that you can and do a little bit of research to see what's possible. Divorces oftentimes come with legal restraints. Put those into place. And if they're not in place now, maybe reach out to both lawyers, your sister and your current wives, and see if you can have them put into place. If it's just completely out of control, you know, bring the courts into the system. If that's not working, bring law enforcement into the system. And then lastly, if you're forced into that environment where a physical confrontation is imminent, you know, like I said, law enforcement's probably going to ask you who initiated the fight. But if it goes that way, do me a favor and win, because these guys sound like they suck. And that's all I have for this Friday.